You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to a Saturday weekend edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. We are going to preview the Knicks game tomorrow, and to do that with me, I have from Bleacher Report, from the Hardwood Knocks podcast, from NBA Math, the deputy editor of Awesomeness, Dan Favalli. Dan, how are you?
I am fantastic, Tony, especially after that intro. How are you doing?
I know you didn't know I was going to say the deputy editor of Awesomeness, but...
No one attaches the word awesome to my name ever, so I did not.
I'm doing well. I'm excited for this game. For those of you listening, we are recording this on Friday, so unfortunately I have nothing to say about the game coming up for me against the Sixers, but hopefully you saw an awesome win for the Indiana Pacers against the Sixers. If not, well, we'll talk about that on our weekly pod next week, but let's talk about this upcoming game against the Knicks. It is Sunday night, but not on ESPN or ABC or anything. Just happens to be a random Sunday night game in Madison Square Garden at 7:30 against the currently 3-4 New York Knicks, who play the lowly but surging Phoenix Suns tonight, so that record will definitely be changed by the time they play. Dan, what have your impressions been of the Knicks as a team so far this season?
My impressions are just mixed because they're doing more stuff that I like than I thought. Getting Kristaps some movement off the ball, which is big. I like the fact that he has the league's highest usage rate right now. I don't think that's necessary per se, but I was kind of worried that they were going to let Tim Hardaway Jr., Jared Jack, Enes Kanter, even Michael Beasley, who hasn't really been playing. I thought they were going to cannibalize a lot of his touches, and we might have like a mini deja vu to last season when Derrick Rose and Carmelo Anthony took away. So I've liked all that. I wish they would play Frank Ntilikina more, even during minutes that matter, rather than going with a Jared Jack. Their defense has been pleasantly surprising. I would like to see more just off-ball movement overall offensively, aside from the stuff they do with Porzingis. I don't like watching Tim Hardaway Jr. still. So it's a mixed bag of emotions. It's cool because they're more competitive than I thought they'd be, which I think supports the notion that Kristaps is probably the player that we think he's going to be when he's healthy. But I also don't want to see them win so much because he's so good that they're in that 34-35 win territory.
Yeah, they seem like they're one piece away, not from being good, but from like having all the pieces of a rebuild, right? They have Ntilikina and Porzingis, and they just need one more guy to kind of cement everything. I should have opened with this. They're 21st in offense and 19th in defense, but they have looked better than that 19th on defense. They got blown out in two of their first three games, one to the Thunder and one to the Celtics. So those kind of are skewing those numbers since we're so early in the season. I'm glad you touched on Porzingis' usage. He's a guy that this is basically 50% of previewing Knicks games is talking about Porzingis at this point. But 35% usage and only 9% turnover rate. So basically he gets the ball and he does something positive with it. 56% true shooting, 24 PER. He's just been incredible. You want to talk about him a little bit more or just wait a little bit till later?
I mean, I'll talk about Kristaps Porzingis all day. I love the fact that the team just seems to recognize what he is. Enes Kanter saying he should be MVP the other day. Absolutely crap to say that because he shouldn't. The Knicks just aren't even close to good enough. But I like that it seems that the Knicks are just intent on featuring him. What I am very much concerned about, or maybe more interested to see, is how this holds up over the course of a season. I don't think he would get burned out from the playing time necessarily, but he's not used to facing some of these defensive looks that he's getting or being used as much when he's on the floor. And you look at over 16% of his shots right now have come with a defender within 2 feet of his person, so very tight. And that's up from about 14.7% last year. That's a fairly big jump when you're talking about the volume that he's going through right now. And defensively, still a very good rim protector, but offenses are trying to get him out of the paint. And I think the Pacers will be one of the teams that will be able to do a good job of that. And that's going to not only move him away from the rim, but then he's just going to be moving around the perimeter a bit more. And that can tire you out more easily. And one of the things that I can't get over, and I had to write about this the other day, so I know this tracking stat, and we take it with a grain of salt because the NBA's tracking stats, when you're outside of the restricted area, is kind of weird. But 390 players going into, we're recording this on Friday, into tonight's game, have played in two games or more, and no one is averaging more three-pointer contests per game than Kristaps Porzingis. Like, that's a problem. He shouldn't be contesting the most threes in the league per game. It just shouldn't be happening. So I'm really interested to see how he's going to hold up within this role. That's not really, he's showing he can perform in it, but it's still not ideal for him. You'd like to see him at the five, and they really haven't carved out any playing time for him there. And that might be something that the Pacers can exploit if they're willing to go with Thaddeus Young at the four a little bit when Kristaps is on the floor. That would be an interesting matchup to see, because he can run pick and roll. The Knicks don't like putting Kristaps Porzingis on the ball handler in the pick and roll. So I wouldn't say excited, but I'd be interested to watch that type of matchup in this game.
Yeah, I think that you said the he defends or contests the most threes. The Pacers run 6 trillion pick and pops every game, so that will probably be a continued trend. Thaddeus Young seems to shoot those above the break threes once every 10 or so, 5 or just 10 possessions. So that's definitely something he'll keep up with. I like that you talked about how they're finally learning he's a center, and yet they still have the challenge of they have Joakim Noah and Kyle O'Quinn and stuff. What is going on?
I guess a window popped up and said my computer is infected by a virus. I X'd out of it. I don't know what that was from.
I might keep this in. This is a funny little.
That's fine. It's from all those fan fiction NBA pages.
It's from so much Porzingis stuff that you got infected.
From so much porn zingis.
Okay. All right. Moving on. Yeah, they can't really play him at center because of some of the other guys in front of him. Well, not they can't, but they don't, because they have Cantor and O'Quinn and Willie Hernan Gomez, who all need minutes there, and they need those guys to kind of build up some value, I guess, if they're going to try to get rid of him. So I guess I know why he hasn't played center, but he definitely would fit better there. Another important position to talk about for the Knicks is obviously the one that is just hilarious. Their point guard rotation has just been comical. My favorite stat, literally of any stat that I've seen this whole season, do you know Ron Baker's free throw attempt rate right now?
I have no idea, actually.
It is 1.4. 142.9% free throw attempt rate for Ron Baker, who has attempted, I'm looking at this now, he has attempted, oh my gosh, I can't find his name, I just blew it. He's attempted 10 free throws and only 7 shots. So that is an incredible stat for a guy who's played almost 50 minutes this season. But their point guard rotation has been him, Ramon Sessions, and Jarrett Jack, and none of them have been good. And they also have put Frank Ntilikina in at kind of 1 and 2 guard, and he's been okay, but he's a rookie. You want to talk about those four guys, or is it just they have the worst point guard rotation in the league? Next question.
Yeah, Frank Ntilikina might save them from worst by the end of the season, but right now I don't even think it's close. And my favorite unofficial stat is Ron Baker is barely in the rotation anymore, and yet he's their highest paid point guard. That's the room exception well spent, folks. And they're lucky because they don't even all four of their point guards aren't even costing them $10 million a year. So if you're going to have a really bad point guard rotation, paying sub $10 million for it is fine. I could do without these Jarrett Jack long twos. He's only been starting for 4 games, I think, he started the season, and I'm just done with watching them. I don't want to see him playing meaningful minutes down the stretch. Give them to Ntilikina, who looks really smooth when he's attacking the basket and pulling up or just shooting off the catch. He just looks so smooth. And when I watch him, I think the Knicks have found a guard that can defend the pick and roll for the first time in the last century. So this is really exciting. And you don't have to play him at point guard, which is why if you want a veteran guy like Sessions or Jack, or your highest paid point guard and Ron Baker on the floor, Ntilikina should still be there because he'll defend twos and threes. And when he was in France, he was one of the guys that I scouted more heavily leading into and after the draft. He wasn't necessarily on the ball that much. He wasn't being used as this pure point guard. I hate that term, but he wasn't an official point guard. So you can mix and match and put him in these different lineups. And just once, I'd like to see the Knicks go really small. Let's put this 6'5 kid at small forward for a little bit. Let's just roll with it, steer into it, have Porzingis at the five and just surround him with four real wings. And, you know, even using him as your de facto one so that you can actually have four wings, because Baker, Sessions, and Jack don't qualify as real wings, and I think Ntilikina does. But overall, right now, the point guard rotation is laughable, and I kind of want to flip this on you. Am I allowed to do that? Is that allowed?
You are after this 30-second or so break. And we're back, so I can answer this question that Dan just asked me. And it's funny because I can bleed this into the matchup that I think the Pacers are going to try to exploit the most, which is going at whoever the next point guard is. But, yeah, I like Kenyon Aquino a lot, too. I was one of the very few people – I mean, I, like, probably would have picked Dennis Smith there, but I actually liked Frank Kenyon Aquino in the draft, and, like, I didn't hate the pick at all when they got him. And you kind of said exactly how I've been thinking of him is, like, he hasn't been dominant or anything, but no rookies are, but he's been smooth, and you can tell he knows what he's supposed to be doing. And there's something to that kind of intelligence, especially for, I think he's only 18 still. He might be 19 now, but for a guy that young who can, you know, set up for his teammates, he definitely has a bright future. But for now, every point guard on this team has been pretty bad. Ramon Sessions seems to always be hurt, and his defense is atrocious. Jared Jack didn't play on a team in the league last year for a reason. Ron Baker's only played 48 minutes and has, like I just said, like a hilarious level of not shooting or scoring well at all. His true shooting percentage is 48. And Kenyon Aquino is a rookie, so it's really bad. And Darren Collison, meanwhile, who for some reason decided he was going to have his prime age season be 32 years old on the Indiana Pacers, has proven that he is worth every penny of the $10 million, hilariously, the value of every Knicks point guard, the $10 million that they signed him to this summer. And he has been, you know, killing it passing and scoring this year and hasn't been turning it over as much as he ever has before. And now Darren Collison looks set up to have a huge game against this Knicks team.
That was how I was going to turn around on you, was you, like, Darren Collison's been spectacular this season from what I've seen and just looking at his numbers. You just have to go at that. I mean, even if it's Kenyon Aquino on the floor, he's a rookie and Collison's been around long enough to try and exploit that. But if he's going to go up against Jared Jack or if they're going to play Sessions, that's just the Pacers are going to absolutely annihilate that matchup, especially with if you watch Jack or Sessions or even Baker, like when the Pacers run those dribble handoff plays, like the Knicks are going to get torched. If they have Darren Collison doing it or even Victor Oladipo and they're trying to switch these guys, they're just going to get absolutely destroyed. I don't know that you could pick another matchup, and you had sent this to me beforehand, that the Pacers would look to exploit other than the point guard position. Maybe if the Knicks go to Kenyon Aquino early or they actually play him like 30 minutes or something like that, things could get a little bit interesting. But looking at the Pacers as point guards or just ball handling guards in general, you include Corey Joseph and Victor Oladipo in there, I don't know how the Knicks are going to stand up defensively. And they've been okay defensively over the last four games. They're 12th in points allowed per 100 possessions, which isn't bad. Their schedule hasn't been especially hard during that stretch, but that's a different story. They just don't have that depth defensively at the guard positions. And I think the Pacers are going to be able to torch them there possession after possession, especially in the half court when you're kind of asking those guys to defend for, let's say, between 13 and 19 seconds of the shot clock.
Yeah, and it's funny because you said depth too. The Pacers' backup point guard, Corey Joseph, probably would be the best point guard and the best shooting guard if he was on the Knicks, on the whole roster. It's so weird how their roster's been constructed, and you said what I would say about those dribble handoffs too, because Enes Kanter is possibly the worst defensive big in the league, if not, you know, bottom 10. And those dribble handoff plays have been so successful for them that if Kanter's on, you know, Sabonis or Turner, whoever happens to be playing in the starting lineup this game, they're going to run those dribble handoffs and just make Kanter either move his feet or stay on the shooter. And either way, it's not going to work. So, yeah, I think they're really going to try to exploit those dribble handoff plays against those guys. And the other matchup for the Pacers, I was going to say, is just that one. Whoever Enes Kanter's guarding, put him in a screen play, go right at him and score. He's not very good on defense. Pretty much just avoid going at Courtney Lee and you'll be fine.
I mean, I'm right with everything you said, and the Pacers have been confusing to me because I don't want to believe that they're this good. I just don't understand with this personnel. Their starting lineup without Miles Turner still scares the living bejesus out of me. That like the Sabonis at the five, like that lineup has been, and I looked this up before the podcast, like that lineup has just been torching opponents by more than 10 points per 100 possessions. I don't know. I have no words for the Pacers. I'm not even sure I watched them enough to get a hand on what they're necessarily doing. But Victor Oladipo does these weird things defensively where it seems like he fakes going after the guy with the ball and then all of a sudden just jams up the passing lane and creates these steals, sometimes these fast break opportunities. Thaddeus Young just seems content with doing whatever. It doesn't matter if he's shooting a bunch of shots or if he's being active on defense and deflecting the ball. He's just one of those guys where his engagement doesn't seem tethered to his involvement on the offensive end, and I think that's rare to find. And you look at them, and maybe I'm being too big picture and moving beyond this game, but you look at them and you realize this shouldn't be sustainable, and some of it's not. But at the same time, Miles Turner has played in one game, and he's not going to make this team worse, even if there's an adjustment period when he comes back. And I'm trying – when you look at – to bring it back to Knicks Pacers, when you look on paper, do you see a matchup that the Knicks are guaranteed to win? Like, maybe it's the Porzingis matchup, but if the Pacers play their power forward cards right, they might just be able to – yeah, they'll get hurt on when they're on defense no matter what, because he'll shoot over guys and he'll do whatever. But they might be able just to go punch for punch with him at the other end of the floor if they're pulling him far enough outside the paint.
Yeah, and tiring him out on D probably is going to be the strategy anyway. But, I mean, you have to think that he is the matchup the Knicks are going to try to exploit, right? Like, Thaddeus Young's okay defending in space, but anyone else, like TJ Leaf's the backup four, and sometimes, you know, like Bojan plays the four in reserve units occasionally, and he's a horrible defender. Like, I still think Porzingis is going to have a nice game. I mean, he's scored 30 every game except for one still this season, right? So I think he's just too hard to stop. And he's when I do this every time, I try to think of, all right, what's the other team going to do to go at the Pacers and score? And you always first look at the point guard who Collison's guarding. We already broke that down. Not a big thing. Then you look at whoever Bojan Bogdanović is guarding, and that's going to be Doug McDermott, who's basically Bojan Bogdanović but 24 years old. And then you have to look elsewhere to see. And for the Knicks, when you look elsewhere, it's obviously just Porzingis, who they're just going to try to feed every time with his record-breaking usage. So if he just has another one of those plus 30-point games, which is incredibly possible, you know, he could easily tear up this team with some sort of shooting. But the question is going to be the efficiency and how many possessions it takes.
I just don't – the Pacers seem to have so many more, right now at least, consistent offensive weapons that I'm not entirely sure it matters what – Kristaps does on offense. Maybe the Pacers take the approach, we'll try and wear him out on defense, and then we'll let him do. I mean, I guess it makes sense to try and really pester him on offense, but they could let him drop a 40 burger and they can still get after it. I mean, you've Victor Oladipo has been spectacular. Darren Collison has been spectacular. Those two have done really nicely playing off the ball when they don't have it in their hands. Bojan Bogdanović is still going to shoot and score. He can play off the catch, create his own shot. Thaddeus Young goes through these streaks where it looks like he's a really good three-point shooter, and then he'll miss a bunch, but then he'll go back to being a really good three-point shooter, and he can do some stuff with the ball in his hands. I love Corey Joseph and have for some time. I know you're kind of – Domantas Sabonis doesn't miss, basically. Like, that's the rule, especially in victories. Isn't he shooting, like, an outlandish percentage in the Pacers' five victories? I don't even know what it is. TJ Leaf, I haven't really watched him this season. I know you were talking about him on Twitter, but he's been really efficient as well. They're just so deep, and the Knicks don't stretch that deep in the offensive well. Tim Hardaway Jr. playing really poorly. They don't have all these reliable shooters. They can kind of bog things down if they're going to work through the post a little bit too much. They've been trying to open up lanes for Kristaps, which I think you can appreciate by pulling Enes Kanter or the other big outside the paint, but that's not always sustainable because your other bigs aren't really good shooters. Kyle O'Quinn, if you're looking at that 4-5 pileup after Porzingis, he's probably their second best floor spacer there, and that's not really saying much. So I'm interested to see what the Pacers do defensively against Kristaps Porzingis, if only because I wonder if they're going to take the mindset of let this guy can do whatever he want. They just don't have the personnel around him to pick up the rest of the slack.
Yeah, and the thought we usually when I ask people this question is like, okay, what matchup the Knicks exploit it? Do they like it's over? They just win, and a lot of teams have that. Like if LeBron just has his triple double and dominates and plays well on defense, which the Cavs apparently can't anymore, the Cavs win, and that didn't happen, so the Pacers won. And then for the game tonight, you know, it's like Ben Simmons and Embiid. If they play a great game, you know, it's going to be hard for the Pacers to win. But for the Knicks, it's like even if Porzingis has a good game, I still think it's going to be hard for the Knicks to win unless someone else plays far above their threshold of skill. And that's kind of what you just said, but how I'm defining this question. So there's not a ton of matchups the Knicks can exploit. They're not deep. They're not skilled outside of Porzingis. It's just a really tough situation for them and their roster, especially against this Pacers team. So good summation of what I think is about to happen.
Am I allowed to ask you a question? Is there anyone outside of Porzingis on the Knicks that, looking from a Pacers perspective, that you can talk yourself into being half or quarter worried about?
Courtney Lee, which we'll talk about after this 30-second break. All right, we're back again, and this time I want to ramble about Courtney Lee for two reasons. Of course, you all know he went to Pike High School, one of Indianapolis' finest establishments and best schools. Congratulations to Courtney Lee for being from Indianapolis, but also, I just said I wanted to ramble about how he could actually have a good game for two reasons. One is because I think he might – I don't know this. Do they start him and Hardaway on the wings or McDermott and Hardaway on the wings?
They're rolling with, at the moment, Courtney Lee and Tim Hardaway.
Okay, yeah. So I'd imagine that Lee is going to be on Oladipo, and Courtney Lee's a pretty good defender, and the Pacers have been pretty awful defending at the point of attack. And I know that Courtney Lee's not going to, like, drive to the hole or anything, but I feel like he does kind of just match up well with the way Oladipo plays. But if Oladipo keeps up his speed, it's not going to matter. But he is one guy who I think could, in theory, have an okay game.
It kind of depends on whether the Pacers decide that they want to defend his three-point shot. Just because more than of his three-point looks have been wide open, uncontested, a defender hasn't been within 6 feet, and he's shooting 55% on those, which has really buoyed his three-point rate on the season. He's not really going to hurt you anywhere else. The Knicks have tried to get him to handle the ball sometimes, and he can do some work there, but he's not that type of a threat on offense. And defensively, I think he's an even to sometimes above average defender, but he can also be a noticeably minus defender on certain nights. I don't know whether it's engagement or it's the level of assignments that he has to handle, but you look at what Indiana's wings and guards just can do with the ball in their hands, and he might be run roughshod on the defensive end. And that I can't even picture him having a good game, but he would probably be I think I agree with you. He would probably be the player best suited to do any kind of damage other than Porzingis in this game. I'd probably throw Neal Keane into that conversation as well if the Knicks decide to play him, and maybe he catches the Pacers off guard. Like, you don't know, that scouting report effect that we sometimes see with a bunch of players, but I don't trust the Knicks enough to be like, hey, let's just play this kid 30 minutes.
They don't play him or Hernan Gomez, who happen to be the guys they should be playing the most. I guess Tim Hardaway could just catch fire and go off, but I can never like Tim Hardaway. He just is an inefficient kind of volume scorer. But with all that said, let's hear it. The NBA Math Bleacher Report Hardwood Knox sponsor Dan Favalli prediction for the final score of Knicks Pacers.
I think I'm going to go Pacers 101, Knicks 89.
Wow, okay, good. Pretty good, pretty close to what I would have guessed a second ago. Always depends on if Miles Turner plays. I can't wait till I don't have to say that anymore. I'm encouraged that he's upgraded to questionable for this game against the Sixers tonight, but I would still hold him out for one more if I was the organization. Regardless, against the Knicks, if he does play, I think they win by about the 12 you just said. I'll go 105-93. If he does not play, I think it's closer to 9 or 8, and it's going to be a little lower scoring in that situation, so I'll go 99-91. But we're going to be wrong because it's an impossible thing to predict, but it's still fun to guess. Dan, where can everyone follow you, and what can they be on the lookout for?
They can follow my useless ramblings at Dan Favalli on Twitter, DanFavalle. I'm going to be dropping a bunch of Hardwood Knox podcasts in the coming week, and they can also be on the lookout for, I am working on something about teams that should already be hitting the panic button once they reach the 10-game mark. So all that fun stuff.
The panic button teams. I'm trying to think. The Cavs. That's fun. I'll be excited to read that. I'm trying to think of any other team besides the Mavericks should be on that. That'll be fun.
They should probably panic because they just need to trade Wesley Matthews already.
They should panic for a lot of reasons, but that was great. Everyone, make sure you follow Dan. He edits some of my stuff, which is terrific because I'm not as good of a writer as the things you actually read. You remember, you can follow me at TEastNBA. You can follow the podcast at LO Pacers if you want to yell at me, or excuse me, at Locked On Pacers if you want to yell at me for saying something stupid and wrong. Email me at LOPacers@gmail.com. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the game Sunday night, and me and Adam will catch up with you Monday.